Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at KBOO.FM. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective, from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features artists who will be performing at this year's PDX Jazz Festival: Branford Marcellus, David Sanborn, Kenny Barron, Miguel Zenon, James Francis, and Kenny Garrett. The program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium. It can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at KBOO.FM, clicking on Audio, then Podcast, and then scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at KBOO.FM.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio at KBOO 90.7 FM and online at KBOO.FM. You're listening to Art Focus, and I'm your host, Amanda Clem. Today we're going to be talking with artists Christine Miller and Brittany Vega about their exhibition American Hex, on view now at Fuller Rosen Gallery in Southeast Portland on Southeast 11th and Division in the Ford Building. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Your show is phenomenal. It is small and it packs such a powerful punch.
The title of the show, American Hex 2, is very interesting. And the symbolism of flags, which Brittany's work has to do with, and then also symbols of early racist Americana objects from Christine's collection.
Both of your works are very object-based in this show, and so I just wanted to kind of start by asking you about, well, kind of both of you, about your individual practices and your collections, and then maybe go specifically into your specific works. And Christine, I know there's also a publication related to this show that's being launched this Saturday, the 22nd. And so let's talk about... Brittany, can you talk a little bit about your background and in flag making in particular?
Yes. So the flag obsession is fairly new. It may be going a couple years strong now and really didn't come into focus until about last year. I was working on a series, American Curtain, which dealt with national imagery but didn't really tackle flags themselves. And then I joined the Portland Flag Association because I was like, if what I don't know, others will know. And I wanted to be educated by those equally obsessed. So I did that, started going to meetings, and then I then worked briefly at Elmer's Flag and Banner, which is on Broadway, highly recommended, and learned a ton about the industry, the anatomy of a flag, hardware, and that really just kind of fed the fire. Yeah. So
what is it about the flag that is appealing to you?
Well, I'm already interested in objects and what they mean as far as what they symbolize, how they're represented in imagery, particularly in U.S. American imagery and symbols. And then coming from previous research and other projects, it was only natural that it rolled into flags. And I think especially with contemporary issues happening right now, flags are they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think they always will be. They always have been. Fabric is familiar to our bodies. It's one of the first materials that we're intimate with. Mm-hmm. And flags are either really elusive or they're very in our face. And they're just strange to me.
Yeah. There's a definite curiosity there. So the flags that are on exhibition, are those, did you print those? And are they pre-existing flags that you have then modified? Or could you create the image? Let's talk about this one in particular.
Yeah.
Horrible Moral Squint.
Yes.
Laser printed flag.
So Horrible Moral Squint 1 and 2 are the two smaller flags that are digitally printed and folded in on themselves and then sewn. Those are the only two that I had printed. everything else in the show were already pre-existing flags that I deconstructed and reassembled into new pieces.
Cool.
I actually worked with Elmer's to have these two pieces printed.
Cool.
So
you can make custom flags at Elmer's.
Yes, you can.
I love that. Support a small business. What you were
Absolutely.
Saying earlier, it's one of the last manufacturer, like in-house flag manufacturers in the U.S.
They do way more than people realize.
Yeah. I've never wanted to visit a flag store so much after that.
Seriously, let's go. And take a field trip. So what is interesting to me about these pieces, the Horrible Moral Squint, is the way that they are folded in on itself and sewn together. So it kind of, from far away, it looks like a really just abstract, like a geometric painting almost. And then you get closer and you can tell it's a flag. And then it kind of looks like it was like flying in the wind and flattened, kind mm-hmm. of. And so it obscures the image totally. And so you can just see little bits and pieces of, you know, you're not sure what. So is that something that we as viewers, like, should we be able to decipher what these images are? Or is that the whole point of the squint and...
Yeah, this squint, like this point of confusion is really priority in these pieces. I mean, I'll give away the secret. These are cropped... The original images are cropped photos of a handshake between Trump and another national leader, which if you've ever looked at those close up, they're gross.
They're gross. And it does, you know, I didn't want to say it. It looks like skin and you're like, you know, you're...
I have a whole folder of these handshakes zoomed in and it's just so bizarre. So now the images, they're abstracted and they're contorted, you know, so it's like the image of the body part is all contorted in on itself. The image of the flag is flattened and abstracted. And there are moments in the flag where I don't sew a contour line or a fold so that the volume kind of remains mm-hmm. and can reference that sort of bodily fold and form a bit more. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's a clue into what at least the fleshy tones are. And then Horrible Moral Squint is a phrase from the play A Man for All Seasons, which was quoted by Turley in one of the testimonies recently. And he was the Republican witness called for. And I got really interested in that, so I read the play. And there's a moment between the main character and another character where the main character, more, he's supposed to be this, you know, representation of selfhood and moral direction. Mm-hmm. And he's very, like, unswaying when it comes to the right way, you know. And another person says to him, you know, if it weren't for your horrible moral squint, you could be a great statesman. So there's this back and forth of, you know, who's the wiser. And then when it comes to like this handshake and moments between leaders, they're these very weird, it's a facade, it's like this agreement, but perhaps both of them think they're the wiser person.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's...
That's interesting.
That is an interesting
takeaway. It's a big load of uncertainty and weird, awkward physical engagement, mm-hmm. so...
So what inspired you to make these? Was it watching the impeachment?
It was. I watch C-SPAN regularly.
An admission.
It's so bizarre and it's slow and it's so boring, which makes it more fascinating to me for some reason. And I used to make fun of my dad all the time because he watches it. And I'm like, God, why are you watching that? And now here I am years later and I'm like, this is so weird.
Like, now I understand.
It's so weird. And it's fascinating that it's just this free, televised, like, laws in action. I was watching all of the testimonies and the trials, and I already had this folder of these images building, and so it was just timely that it materialized.
Mm-hmm. Is this a smaller part of a larger series?
I do plan to make more, yeah.
There's so much content now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got quite a few handshakes and a lot of sweaty palms to capture coming up, especially with the election cycle. Content, yeah. So then there's another piece that it is kind of the opposite in a way, in that it's pre-existing flags that are fully deconstructed.
Yeah, the first piece seen when you walk into the gallery is When the Fly-In Phrase, And that title, first I'll say, is kind of an open-ended, and, you know, finish the blank. And what the blank would be is you dispose of the flag.
Ah.
That's flag etiquette.
Okay.
When it frays to a certain extent, you have to get rid of it and replace it. What's happening in this piece now is multiple flags, the frayed fly-ins, have been cut off and then repurposed to be the flags themselves. And every part of this is repurposed from other flags, the heading, the grommets. So this is a little more emotionally driven as far as feelings on the state of how things are. It's not exactly. It's kind of a bummer.
You have a lot of content.
You know. So I don't know. I have less words for this one because it has less textual research behind it, and it's more experimental. And mm-hmm. what does it mean to take the part you're supposed to get rid of, mm-hmm. and it's actually representative of how things are?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I never thought of it like that. It's so cool.
That is so cool. This does look very raw. I mean, raw not because of the edges of the flag even, but because there is an emotional content behind that, probably the layers of it, and then the intentional, the droop downs of some of the threads that connect two sides, which I really think is beautiful.
It's like the trash at the forefront.
Yeah.
Which sounds like our government.
Yeah. So are these collected flags from, how did you get a hold of these
flags? So when a flag should be disposed, technically it should be taken somewhere to be disposed of. So Elmer's actually offers that service.
Okay.
So these are a few different state flags. So what's also interesting here is that the treatment for these flags is very different from the U.S. American flag. It has a whole other list of rules to follow. It's very particular.
The American flag.
Yeah, so it's interesting that the treatment for an object, which is so replaceable, and it's just fabric,
mm-hmm.
but the etiquette behind it is so particular and precious. Seeming,
yeah.
And it's
mm-hmm.
like, so in my head I'm like, gosh, wow, just a textile, like, and we can't treat people okay, you know, so
yeah.
That's all kind of folding in for feelings behind this piece.
Thank you. One of the things that kind of connects to your works, besides the fact that they're just physical objects, but that they are from collections and that they are objects that have definitely just like a more loaded purpose than your average sculpture show. And Christine, I'm going to call your work a sculpture show because that is how it feels, and it in a way that is disorienting. And so I wanted to talk to you about a couple of your pieces, but first tell us a little bit about your collection, because the work that's on display in the exhibition are objects from like Jim Crow era, racist Americana, the salt and pepper shakers, is that what those two are?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these, they're tchotchkes, they're just like...
they're products.
Products,
yeah
like
more than sculptures.
Like, yeah, but then you've got them displayed in these acrylic, like very poppy, bright colors, and that draw you in so much, and the pretty shapes of the flowers, and so... Can you talk to us a little bit about your collection first? How did this collection come to be, and why did you decide to display it, I suppose, like this? And
it's a long story of how this mm-hmm. whole even started, but it started from college first of taking things and actually making drawings and stuff like that, and it kind of evolved to buying product. So the class in college was actually a screen printing class, and it was about making product. And it was a time when To Pimp a Butterfly came out, and Kendrick was just on fire talking about just issues in the Black community and just putting it in this beautifully packaged album. And just really inspired by that and wanted to talk about slavery in the same way, and I made kitchen product with it. So my background is in product and the fashion industry and worked in it forever. And yeah, just kind of evolved into buying stuff after seeing it and learning about it, mm-hmm. and learning about David Pilgrim and having nightmares about it, especially the alligator bait piece. So I call my whole thing alligator bait, black babies, free lunch in the jungle, because that literally gave me nightmares when I first learned about it. And it was product and imagery based off of, still trying to see if it's true or not. I really think it is true about slave owners and people in Florida using black babies and black people to hunt alligators. And then it became a joke and became actual things and inspiration for things.
And
after I finally got one, it was just getting a ton of different things. And that's where I'm
at. Yeah, so that piece that you were just speaking about, the alligator bait, that's what is exhibited in the show, is a letter. It's a physical object. It's a letterhead opener, and the sheath is the alligator, and then the head is the, like,
right person coming out.
Opener. So, yeah, it's a horrifying image, and then you've got it displayed in a mirror so that you can see it from all the
sides.
And then the reflection of the light, too, was just like, look at this.
I mean, coming from a product background, thinking about what's made and how it's displayed is definitely a huge component of everything. So, yeah, just taking it out of the context of a history book and things like that that they don't teach you in school, and putting it in an artistic way for people can relate to it and be attracted to it to actually learn about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely. And what's striking to me, too, is that you can also tell that it's mass-produced. Like, it doesn't look like a one-of-a-kind object. It's like somebody decided to put this in full production. And really put it out there.
So callously.
And to just, let's talk about that. So because it's just, you're using these symbols and these icons from advertisements, and specifically this piece that Aunt Jemima, are these objects as you collected them, or did you frame them?
Oh, so it was just the thermometer in and of itself, and then just the advertisement. And first, huge shout out to Tap Plastics and Jessica at Tap Plastics. Love her.
Nice.
I came in and wanted to make like a Petri dish, and she helped me like assemble it. And I've been making boxes like ever since.
Nice.
But yeah, so I mixed pancake flour with adhesive, and the one on the right has pearls and lace in it, and the other one has like fake flour is hardened to kind of make a shell and fastened with screws. So yeah, all about buying pieces that aren't way too expensive, because that kind of defeats the point of showing how accessible these things were.
Yeah.
Kirby John Raymond from Pyre Moss was talking about Business 500 and how they did this cultural appropriation event. And he made this article that was beautifully written, and he said, "Is everything black for sale? You know, even our pain, even our trauma." And, like, even finding Black Americana memorabilia now is so expensive. I've been bought out nonstop. And I'm always like, well, who's buying this? You know, there was this one thing I wanted to buy, maybe for, like, $100. And that was a lot for me, because I normally just spend $14. I was bought out for $300. And I'm like, who bought this?
What was it?
It was a card game. It was called In Dixieland, and it was like a card game of just young black kids, just racist quotes or something underneath it. And it was, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of content to work with, and bought out $298. So this is also my way of saying, like, all right, I'm not going to buy this. I'm going to make my own content and still use the same sort of inspiration. Aunt Jemima was created as a character to promote slavery, of like, oh, you know, they're happy where they are, and look at this happy character, happy where she is and serving white people, and just the imagination of people and what they come up with is just astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, slavery was not just a physical bondage, it was also really a mental one, and it's
that's
pretty
persisted,
sick.
The adoption of the like making the slave a part of the family, and it's
and happy
to be there, is just the most twisted.
Yeah,
and I love that
you use the batter around it to just, I mean, you have to mix it up and then to, yeah, and dry. It kind of reminds me of like a fresco painting, like yeah, a mural or something like that.
And it's Angelima flower also.
Perfect. To keep it there. So on that note, there's another product packaging that's part of the exhibition that I definitely thought was just like a satirical, I don't know, a fake product, but I'm now assured that it is not, and it is horrifying to think that. So this is toothpaste that's called Darkie Toothpaste.
Yeah, it was actually designed off of a minstrel character. So two things gave me absolute nightmares. Well, yeah. Three. Rosewood, the movie, Alligator Bait, and blackface. Like, even now when I see people in blackface, a minstrel, it just, I don't know, it just does something to me, which freaks me out. But yeah, it was a toothpaste made in, I forgot what part of Asia, off of a minstrel show performer. And I think people protested it after a while, and they changed it to Darlie Toothpaste, which still means Darkie. And they changed the advertising. So it's like, oh, great. But yeah. So again, shout out to Tap Plastics. I made this infinity box to resemble like a mirror, you know, something in your cabinet. And yeah, something about seeing it over and over was just really powerful and mind-blowing to me. But all of them, that I want to be really subtle, not like in your face, like I'm blowing this up to a humongous scale. It's all about the small seeds that live in people's cabinets. Yeah. That they bought out to this mentality of when they went out and saw someone black or...
It's insidious. So...
Yeah. I think it was just important to speak people's language and kind of experiment and putting it in a quote-unquote palatable sense for people would be open to learning about it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. The palatable sense, the pretty pop, bright pink flowers behind some of the pieces.
Right.
Yeah, it definitely draws you in. It is definitely disorienting, too, once you focus on what the objects are.
Right.
Okay, so then let's just change gears a little bit. So a lot of work was created specifically for this exhibition, including a publication.
I'm still trying to find ways to actually put it in a sentence. It's called My Black is the Color of the Sun. And I call it a visual conversation about just growing up, dealing with colorism and how it ties into my work and why I do what I do, especially living in this age of where Black joy is being celebrated and it should be celebrated, and why I'm so obsessed with this, because it's the why we need to keep saying Black is beautiful, why we need to keep having representation of beautiful Black people doing beautiful things, why we need to be in leadership, why we need to be in certain things. Because so much of how we look visually was used as inspiration for horribleness. Toni Morrison wrote this book that I'm obsessed with because it took me forever to read, and I finally got through it. And she talked about the importance of studying the masters, including the slaves, and how the presence of Black slaves actually inspired just this dark imagery. So it's like racism, these objects right here, is such a visual entity. And yeah, and just talking about that.
Yeah.
My friend Ruby Joy White, who's absolutely amazing, they're going to be joining me in the conversation, and she's just like a powerhouse. So yeah, should be a good time.
That's great. So that'll be Saturday, February 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Everyone can go. And will the book be for sale?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, a beautiful 8x10.
Lovely.
So they're like, oh, let's make it big. So I'm really excited.
Is this your first time making a publication?
Yes. Great. It was hard. Yeah. But it was really amazing.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting process. Christine, let's talk a little bit, too, about your background, because we just kind of glossed over it. You're very involved in the apparel design field, and so you studied at Ashton Institute for Technology in New York City.
Yeah, born and raised in New York.
Born and raised
native
in
New Yorker.
And so then was your curatorial debut at Tips on Failing, which was titled Brown Sugar, which is a group exhibition that you put together.
Yeah.
Local Portland-based
Black women or femme
artists.
Yeah.
And it was a tremendous show.
Thank you.
Definitely all over the place in terms of, you know, the textile-based apparel and then the print-based work.
Yeah.
And It was so that was your curatorial debut. And what did you learn from that experience? And what are you excited to like put forward again?
I learned how to use Eventbrite.
Oh, nice.
I learned how to use Facebook events.
Cool.
That was one of the hardest things I've ever done, even harder in college. But it all came from me not feel good enough at work. Yeah. And it was just about like what to do when you're not being able to show your full capacity in one way. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to fully immerse myself in this. And the results were great. Sorry, that doesn't answer the question, but I just really wanted to say it.
It does, though. I think it does. You know.
But yeah, I just recently found out I got funding for a summer project called Black Playground at Tips on Failing Again. I love working with Gage in August, so I'm really excited.
That's great.
I just want to heal and sit down for a little bit, but it doesn't seem like that's happening anytime soon. But yeah, really just highlighting Black artists here in Portland and so much creativity. And yeah, I don't know what's going to happen yet. I just found out, so I'm just kind of letting it brew.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
That's exciting. Congrats.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. So, yay, I'm so excited about that. And Brittany, what do you have coming up?
Well, I'll add to Christine's list. We'll be in Bomb Magazine soon-ish.
Ooh. Congrats.
No date yet. I'm not really sure. Okay. But that's really awesome.
That is really awesome. We'll keep our eyes
open. Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah. Otherwise, I am, of course, just still working and diving into new stuff. Research mode is on. Application mode is on. So that's all happening. It's exhausting.
Yeah. It is so exhausting.
So it's kind of that in-between period from a long stretch of work, and now the show's up, and now I thought I'd get a break, but now it's like office time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to hustle.
And the applications are in the works.
Yeah. So
I feel like they're all the same
funding
time.
Funding applications.
That and residencies.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What residencies are you applying to?
So Glean, the deadline is soon.
Nice.
Portland.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Interested in that. And then also Galveston, the Galveston residency in Texas.
Oh.
So
a lot of flax.
So yeah, I'm kind of having a hankering for travel and going back south for a minute to see what I get into.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a return, I'm hoping.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being here. It was really nice to talk with you both. I'm really excited to see what 2020 has in store for you both in terms of recharging and research and future publications and exhibitions.
Thank you. See you in the summer.
Yeah.
Yes, summer. You've been listening to Art Focus with Amanda Clem on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Hello, KBOO listeners. It is just before noon, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. We wanted to let you know that you can make a valuable impact on KBOO by donating your unused vehicle, and this includes cars, trucks, motorcycles, and even recreational vehicles. Not only can KBOO benefit financially from your donation, but your gift also might qualify as a tax-deductible donation. We can even pick up your vehicle at no charge, even if it's not working. For more info on this program, call KBOO at 503-KBOO-123 or go to kboo.fm. As always, we appreciate your support. Thank you. And now it's Buscando America after these following announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Women's March, Sunday, March 1st, from noon to 3 p.m. at Portland State University South Park Blocks in Portland. Portland Women's March is a rally committed to advancing political and social change to create an inclusive safe space for women and their allies. Again, that's Portland Women's March, Sunday, March 1st, from noon to 3 p.m. at Portland State University South Park Blocks, 1436 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society's concert series, featuring Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, an ensemble from the worlds of jazz and folk music. The show is Friday, February 21st, 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Sam Ryder has been a U.S. State Department musical ambassador, taking his accordion to at least six nations. For 6 years, Ryder has been band leader for Jazz at the Lincoln Center's youth program. The Human Hands feature the violin stylings of Oregonian Alex Hargraves. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Take a little time out to you. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. And we could.